You're watching Real Review with me, Faiza Ahmed. Coming up today, we visit Lebanon's largest Palestinian refugee camp in Mehdi Flafel's documentary, A World Not Ours. And joining me today, we have Gada Karami, Palestinian academic and author, and Maria Duarte, film critic for The Morning Star. Welcome to the show, both of you. Now, the documentary is set in a refugee camp, Ain El Helwi, which was only meant to serve as a temporary abode for Palestinian refugees, obviously following the ethnic cleansing of Palestinians in the Nakba, also known as the catastrophe. Now, the director uses home video footage of his family and friends collected over the last couple of decades to recount the day-to-day lives, the despair, and the struggles of those left behind. Now, having done rounds on the festival circuit, the film has attracted a lot of positive attention, and at the same time, it's courted some controversy. The documentary won the Peace Film Prize Award at the Berlinale Festival. Now, apparently, during the Q&A, the director made some remarks about Israel, and this prompted several German right-wing media outlets to call for the prize to be withdrawn. So what is life really like for the displaced Palestinian refugees? Let's take a look.
This is Ain Helwi, the Palestinian refugee camp where my family is from. My friends in Europe have never understood why I'd spend my holidays in a place like this. But to me, going to Ain Helwi is better than going to Disneyland. This is my best friend, Abu Yad. He's been in the PLO since he was 7. I've always wanted to tell a story about this place. And I've been filming here since I was a kid. Every summer, when my holiday's over, I can leave Ain Helwi whenever I want. But for my friend, it's a different story.
هي بروحت سفرت ورجعت ولقيتني بعدني مثل ما انا تعنزل عملية فشل حالي يا زلمة تعرف انا بقول اغلب اللي كانوا فجروا حاليا حالتي زي حالتي بقسم الثورة وقسم فلسطين بس انه شو ينهوا حياتها
So A World Not Ours, a slightly refreshing take, I guess, on the Palestinian struggle, which has been the subject of a countless number of documentaries and films. And the director did say that he was hoping, I guess, to not make a typical Palestinian documentary. So Maria, did he succeed in doing that?
Oh, very much so. I mean, this is such a breath of fresh air. As you said, it's been done so many times. And it was a Palestinian refugee camp, The Wonder Years meets Woody Allen. And I loved his use of home videos and the humour that he uses. And it results in such a watchable and powerful study of the human cost of exile on these people.
Gera, do you think he's got the, I guess, the political message across, even though in a slightly subtle way?
Yes and no. I tell you, first of all, I found this film painful. I can't help it. I am Palestinian, and I lost my home in 1948. And the whole issue of the dispossession, the way that innocent people who had done nobody any harm ended up losing their homes, their country, and living these suspended lives, which this film shows very well, without end, apparently, in these camps. So although it was very well done in the sense that it revived memories for me, I've been to Ain al-Hilwa camp at least twice, and it brought those, it's very well photographed, it's a very good, vivid evocation of the situation exactly in there. And that's why I say it's painful. But you know, one thing that's sort of worried me all along about the film was, does the viewer, I wonder, not need a little bit more history, some more information about how this happened? I know it's you don't want to end up with a kind of history documentary, but the problem is that ordinary people, and I really hope this gets to ordinary people, not people like me, may not be quite clear why these people are there.
Maria, do you think you need the political context?
Well, he does
for
explain
this
in the middle. He gives you a little potted history of what happened.
And with the archive.
Exactly. And he says, you know, in 1948, Palestinians were moved out and the Israelis were moved in, and the state of Israel was declared. But I think just watching these people in that camp, their lives day in, day out, and the fact that his best friend, you know, seems so disillusioned with what's going on there, I think it does come across really poignantly. And he chooses three people that are terribly colourful, and you can relate to. I mean, yes, his grandfather was hilarious at times, but you can understand his frustration, and the fact that he was still waiting to be repatriated, and it was he'd been there 64 years.
And you've
maybe
just mentioned his best friend, who was quite disillusioned. We're going to see him in the next clip. So let's go in here from the director's friend, Abu Yard, a resident from the camp, as he ponders over his future.
وين دار روح استركت الان؟ وين دار روح؟ فيش شيء عين ما من ناحية حياة، كل شيء صعب عنا. وأنا خلقان هون بهي لبنان أخت المنيوك يا ناك ربنا يا البلد. يا زلمة شوف أنت ما أحقرن يا زلمة. أخ أنت ممنوع تشتغل، ممنوع تعمل، إذا بتتعلم تلاقي الشغل، إذا هاي ممنوع. وش في حقارة أكثر من هي؟ بحياتك سمعت في حقارة أكثر من هيك؟ وبقولوا لك البلد ديمقراطية وإعلام من حر وهي عشو؟
That's a really powerful scene, not, you know, just the things he's saying, but the way it's been shot. Now, Abu Yard, as we mentioned earlier, he's quite a disillusioned character in this. Maria, why do you think that is?
Well, basically, he sees his best friend, that he can come and go as he pleases, whereas he feels trapped in this refugee camp. And it's never really explained why he, that's the only thing I'd say, why he can't leave, whereas the filmmaker's father decided that he didn't want to live in the camp anymore, and so he went to Abu Dhabi and took his, or Dubai rather, and took his family there. And so this guy is watching his best friend come and go every summer, and realizes that he can't, and it is unfair. He's not allowed to work. We don't understand. Or I didn't quite understand why he wasn't allowed to work. He's given payments by Fatah that only allow him to buy cigarettes and coffee. And you think, well, how did the rest of the people in this refugee camp manage to have a living, you know, are able to sustain themselves?
Again, Maria's just mentioned Fatah and how, you know, they're giving him this small allowance to buy cigarettes and coffee. But he still seems to be quite angry towards them. Where does that anger come from?
Well, because you see, it's to do with the general feeling amongst the refugees, wherever they are, in fact, that the Palestine Liberation Organization and Fatah, which is the dominant group in the PLO, have failed. They haven't liberated the country. They haven't allowed for the right of return for the refugees to go home. What have they succeeded in doing?
Did that come from the Oslo Accords? Did that slightly change, I guess, the political mood among Palestinians and especially the refugees?
Absolutely. But you know, it's before the Oslo Accords, because